Thank you for joining us today at the Thai Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Then you're able to deliver on it because you're a little bit more focused. You have a goal and a mission and a purpose. If you're first off in the morning and you're just going and the sun is rising and the birds are chirping and the dew, I mean, it's like, this is cool. There's so many creative people in golf now that want to do these cool things that inspire and motivate people and attract attention. You dig a little deeper. You go play that next layer of courses that most people don't get to see. And there's a healthy part to playing golf and to being outside and enjoying what you're doing every day.
Patrick Koenig is here with us. Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's good to be on the show. It's a Saturday. I'm ready to rock and roll.
It's cold everywhere, but we're going to go ahead and get straight to the dirt here. Patrick, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking coming off of a 580 golf course bender in 365 days?
Well, we'll start with the drinking. I'll tell you what I'm not drinking is booze. Going on 18 years or going on 19 years of sobriety, which is a reason that I'm able to do this, which is one of the coolest things. It's kind of the foundation for my entire life is living a sober lifestyle. So I'm not drinking the booze. When I tell you, I got into, it was Atlanta when I became a Fresca man. I don't know why I was not aware of Fresca before this trip. I think I had heard of it, but pounded down a Fresca and I was like, I'm a Fresca man now. I must have had four on the back nine out there at Hawks Ridge, which is a fantastic little golf course. And I think I was up to 150 courses on my march to the record about that point in time. So that's what I'm drinking these days. I'm drinking a Waterloo right now, but I'm kind of pissed it's not a Fresca. That's what I'm drinking. I'd love to be eating a burger, dog. That's the unequivocal food of the RGV Tour. I played all the courses at the Olympic Club, the Ocean and the Lake, and the Cliffs course even, which didn't count for the record because it's a par three course. But I like to get two burger dogs when I'm there because one just isn't enough for me. What am I reading? The last thing I read was the article in the Wall Street Journal, which was one kind of a cool finish to the tour. Jason Gay did a fantastic little write up. It was exciting to be on the pages of the Wall Street Journal. We had the front page of the sports section, which was absolutely awesome. But you know, when you're playing this much golf, you don't have a lot of time to read much. But I certainly read that. And then thinking. I'm thinking it's nice to be done with, it's raining right now and I'm pretty stoked and not playing golf in the rain because I played in anything. The only thing that stopped me would be lightning. And that only stopped me once from finishing that round. And that's what I'm thinking right now. It's good to be a world record holder.
It's pretty cool. Congrats on 19 years. That's a hell of an achievement.
And, thank you.
I think we were talking about the rain before recording. I heard something that you were talking about, and I'm not sure if this was 2018 or whether it was the 2023 RGV Tour. But how many days did you have in the rain, in crappy weather, in the last 365?
Yeah, so out of the 580, I'd say probably about 100 of them I played in the rain. There was one streak. Where I had 22 courses in a row where it rained at some point during the round, which I think was pretty special. I was towards the end, I was kind of pulling for it to rain on me a little bit because it was so absurd. I mean, it was just no matter what, I got to the 18th hole and just get dumped on a little sprinkle counted a couple of times. But you'd have to work hard to get 22 courses in a row where you get rained on. And I mean, that's the thing is if you're, I'm setting a world record. So I had that mentality that I'm playing no matter what, and was extremely driven to play golf every single day. And so a little bit of rain, which everybody likes it 70 and sunny, but you're not going to get that no matter where you go. And you gotta tee it up. But some of those were the most fun. Those are the ones looking back that I remember. And there's a cool little video of me at Bandon Dunes. And it is coming down sideways. It was funny because the round itself wasn't rainy the entire round. And by the time we walked off the 18th green, the sun popped out. But when Nathan came out, Nathan runs the social media at Band of Dunes. And they were going to do a little piece on my world record, just kind of a fun reel. And he came out on the ninth hole. And the ninth hole is when it really started getting ridiculous. And we created a fun little reel that people – which was interesting because it did very well in terms of the algorithm and the people that saw it. And I think that's because people love to kind of share that misery and the unusual experience. And everybody that's been to Bandon Dunes had a story. There must have been 100 people in there that commented, "We played in that when we were there." And then, you know, they just kind of love that aspect of it. So I say, if you're shying away from the extreme weather, you're doing yourself a disservice of a story and a memory and you know, that experience of playing in the rain is usually one that you remember.
Yeah, and likewise, those make the ones that are just picture perfect even more picture perfect. They make them what they are. What region of the country were you when you got 20 something days in a row?
That was over, I think it was 4 states and 3 countries. I was on the East Coast, like Virginia. I think I got up to, I was in the Virginia, New York area. And then I went over to Scotland and Finland, and it meant to rain every single round that we played there, which was impressive. And then I think it was Pelham Country Club that ended the streak, which is a beautiful little New York course. And that was a fun round. I mean, there's so many good golf courses in the New York area. And Pelham's kind of one of those that has some history in terms of, I think they've hosted a couple major championships long ago. And the caliber of the course is still there, but most of these courses that hosted events and major golf tournaments back in the day just haven't had the room to expand to accommodate the infrastructure as well as the length of the golf courses. And so those are the ones that are usually the coolest because they've got that major pedigree. And those courses tend to stand the test of time. While they may not be suitable for, you know, the Dustin Johnsons of the world, they're certainly suitable and plenty challenging for golfers like me. You know, and I get it. And I hit my tee ball anywhere from 180 to 280. And I mean, if I tee it up at 6,600 yards, I mean, I'll have a ton of fun playing a golf course like that. And so, you know, that leads to the conversation is, you know, the lengthening of these golf courses is only for the 1%, right? And so I played a ton of courses and I didn't find any courses that I was like, this course is just too short to have any fun or to challenge me. You still got to make the putts. You still got to hit the chips. And that was kind of a long answer to your question. But that was, it was kind of the springish time and plenty of showers for me.
You mentioned infrastructure, and I had at least written down some notes on, like, kind of wanted to get into some infrastructure talk, and you said the word, so we'll go for it early. When I think about how many rounds you played over the last year, and we can talk about 2018 later down the road, but it's a lot of golf. It's more golf courses than anybody's played. I just think about reps, you know, but going golf adjacent for a moment, you've seen a lot of golf holes. I want to talk about that stuff, but I want to talk about the parking lots and the showers and the trinkets out on a golf course, the branding. Can we go through a couple and just talk about some of the nuance within the golf courses that you see because you've seen so many?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of every golf course is a different adventure, and there's so many things to love about a golf course. And you mentioned it from, and I even appreciated the parking lots of golf courses more so than anybody would ever think to. I mean, nobody talks about great parking lot out there at Bethpage Black, and Absolutely, it's a great parking lot. Probably one of the best, because what you've got out there is folks that are camped out overnight to get a tee time on the black course. And so I happily joined in. Sometimes even when I wasn't playing, I just parked that beauty in the lot of Bethpage and cut it up with some of the guys waiting to get onto the black course. So I mean, things like that I have an appreciation for. And I stayed in a lot of golf course parking lots overnight, and the courses that hosted me were very generous to allow that to happen. And that's just one aspect. That's before even, then you get into the pro shop and grab some stuff to put in that RGV, which was one of my favorite things to do. It kind of became like this little, first things first, let's get some swag from the golf shop so I can put it up and kind of memorialize that golf course being a part of the tour. Everything from just I covered pretty much every square inch of that thing. A lot of ball marks. I did the poker chips as well. Anything that the whole ceiling was covered with pin flags. 117 I managed to find a spot for in there. And so those were some of the cool things that I love to get. And shout out to Signs by the Sea. They have the little wooden signs. Those were kind of the it was a really good course. Maybe they had some of those, and I'd grab one of those and put it on the wall. So decorating the recreational golf vehicle was one of my favorites. And so, there we are. We got the parking lot conversation, you got the pro shop conversation, and then you get to the good stuff, and you actually get to play the golf courses.
What state has the best infrastructure in general? Best roads, best bridges? I mean, you're driving
Oh yeah.
that thing
Yeah,
around, you get to
that's a
see all
good
that.
question. It's a good question. The most horrific part of the country to drive an RV around is New York. New York's roads are 5 times worse than anywhere else. I mean, it's like not even close. As soon as you get over there, it's just like, oh man, I'm getting flashbacks and nightmares, because you just are driving. It's like bang, 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 and everything's just shaking. Stuff's falling off, and you're cruising, and it's crowded, and it's high stakes too. So I say what I mean by high stakes is that you make a wrong turn, you could potentially decapitate the air conditioning units off the top of your RV, and it's game over. Because the way that they designed that city back in the day was, I think there was some sort of class elitist sort of drivers there, because they all the parkways, which is how most people get around in New York City, they're everywhere, were all designed specifically to keep classes separate. And part of that was that they had a height limit on the parkways. I guess they were meant for leisure driving back when they were created, and they did not want trucks or high things on there. So everything's like 10-foot clearance. And so if you're not careful and you turn down a parkway, you're either going under a thing, giving yourself a haircut, or you're calling the highway patrol to figure out a way that you can back out and get onto the road you should be on. Fortunately for me, I was very aware of this, and I managed to survive. Only had to cut a couple people off as I'm trying to get over a last second exit. But that just makes it stressful. You're already driving in New York in a giant bus, but the payoff is that you get the best golf in the country if you get those tee times. And so it's well worth it. I spent a couple weeks driving around New York and played, boy, just some of my favorite places, that places you hadn't heard of that are awesome. And there's a, you could throw a stone and hit a course that's will blow your mind out there on Long Island.
I got a couple follow-ups to that. The first is that, I had heard you mention obviously how good the golf is in New York. It's so incredibly dense. It's great on the public side. It's great on the private side. So many great things in the summertime there. But you're also, I mean, you're talking about 580 courses. So you need a lot of 36 hole days in there. New York makes it very easy to do that. What was it like trying to get, those in? Does 36 holes a day after day, wear on you? How
Yeah,
does all that work?
kind of becomes the norm. You just get used to, you got a round in the morning. And when I was in on the East Coast, it was nice because the days were long. It's the summertime, and so it's not quite the jam that you got, oh, I got to be first off if you even want to think about 36 when it comes to December. you know, you got to be first off, and then you're hustling to get it on the back end. So in the summertime, you know, I had hours to plan around that. And so that was kind of a joy. I didn't do too many days over 36 because the 449 was the existing record. And so you look at that and like, well, that's just 18 a day. And then 36 on the weekends would put you right at about 450. I obviously wanted to go for more than that. And so I did just as many days of 36 as I could, you know, as I look at it. And the thing about America is that you can play 36 in a day, pretty much anywhere. You know, there's there's two golf courses that are close to each other that you could play in a day pretty easily. The ones that where they're on the same property just make it much more, make it easier, more effective. You know, like we mentioned Beth Page, and I did 54 there and then 36 the next day. So we played all five courses in 2 days. And that was a real cool thing. But yeah, handful of 54. I did one day of 72, which was a little much, but yeah, you know, four courses in a day, that just moved me closer to the number.
Yeah. I was wondering if you would go kind of more top heavy on the front end of the year, but it's so weather dependent and location dependent. And I'm sure scheduling courses is interesting because you can't plan out your whole year in advance. You have to do it kind of as you go along.
Yeah.
So it would have been interesting.
It would have been great to, you know, just get I did try to go out heavy and do a lot of days of 36, but I started, you know, in January. So the days aren't long then. And it's tough to get in 36. So I think overall I had a pretty even keel pace of around, 36 a day. I think it came out to 1.7 courses per day on average. And there was no, you know, in the summer I was obviously hammering out. I had a couple weeks where I was just where I do 36 a day for like 2 weeks in a row, you know, that's really rocking and rolling. And that happened, mostly in the summertime, cause it was just easy to do it, you know, yeah. As I got towards the end, it was tough. I was still hammering out days of 36, but it was not easy at the end. Cause it's easy to get an 18, but man, a lot of rounds that finished, in darkness or near darkness.
The other question that I had was about your time overseas. I don't know how long that trip was, but was it weird breaking it up and not being in the RGV, just kind of mixing it up and staying somewhere versus being in your own space?
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to have a little bit of a break because the folks over at Golf Gamebook, who are the partner, the main sponsor for the entire journey, this trip doesn't happen without Golf Gamebook. It's a scorecard and GPS and tournament management software, which was really fun. That's where I kept all my scores and put exclusive social content. And it was just at any point in the time you could fire up that app and see what golf course I was on. And they're based out of Finland. And so when I got to New York, it made sense. And they said, let's plan a little jaunt over to Finland and spent a week in Finland, I think 7 days, and played 10 golf courses. And it was cool to have those guys kind of plan my schedule for 7 days. And it was a nice little break because the planning and the routing and where you go next is just never ending. And it kind of wears on you after, you know, just play 36 holes, enjoy yourself. But you're like, I got to book up two new tee times and I don't know where I'm going in this little patch. And so you always got to figure that out. And that was a daily task in terms of figuring out who I was going to play with, where I'm going to play. Then things come up, you know, people can't do this, you can do this. And, you know, sometimes you hang around. I really like for myopia, I really wanted to see myopia, but I couldn't get on until a little bit later than ideal. And so I hung around Boston for a little bit longer. And that was kind of part of the fun. You know, you end up digging a little deeper into a landscape that, you know, Boston's dense. And I got to see some really cool spots and places that you would not, if you know, if you're traveling for golf and you book a trip, you've got the big names that people gravitate towards. And I certainly played plenty of those, but the parts that I thought were the coolest were is when you're in a neighborhood or a region of the country and you dig a little deeper, you go play that next layer of courses that that most people don't get to see. And quite honestly, I wouldn't have played if I wasn't just hanging out in an RV looking for nothing but golf. And that was cool. I got to see some gems and experience golf is the locals play it, you know, get on a public course that everybody loves to play. This one's a favorite. You can see why. And so that's kind of the fun thing, is that there's endless amounts of exploration to do in terms of golf courses in the United States. I mean, nobody's going to play them all. I don't think it's possible in a lifetime to play all the golf courses in America alone, much less the world. And so that's what's neat about it, is that as this being my profession as a golf course photographer, I get to explore until, you know, the day that I die, which is great. And we've got, I mean, just as many courses as you could want to see are being built. As with this boom in golf, there's more than we've ever gotten before. And everything that is built these days tends to be really good. And so that's a full-time job, is just exploring the new golf courses that pop up.
Yeah, I really resonate with what you're saying about the daily tasks and planning out your path, but also kind of the way it's set up is your best experiences are where you had to pivot a little bit and maybe wait it out a couple of days, and then it gets you out of that planning mode and you're present and kind of the golf course is right there in front of you. And likewise with, yeah, I think we all want this highly concentrated golf experience where, you know, the majority of the holes are really interesting and good and the whole vibe is really good. But, you know, there's a lot of really great inspiration out there on golf courses where, you know, only three or four of the holes out there are like really captivating, but it's still worth seeing. That's where a lot of the great stuff is. But the time that's required to see a lot of that is significant. Like a lot of the people I talk to on the golf course architecture side who travel for the stuff, and they've gotten to see a lot of really great golf that not a lot of people can pick those holes out and say, this is interesting, this is worth studying, this is worth replicating. Are few and far between. Like, it just requires a lot of time and energy and effort to go find those things. You talked also about the new courses being built, and I'm wondering if you have a preference, if that preference has changed on kind of what your favorite golfing experience is. Is it more on the modern side? You talked earlier about those old school golf courses. Is there one that you enjoy more than the other these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I love it all. You know, it's hard for me to say that, you know, an old school Tilling Ass from the 20s or Donald Ross, those things are awesome. And they're some of the best golf courses in the country we have. And then you've got another category of, you know, modern masterpieces. A place like Sandhills, you know, was built with the guys are still alive that built that. That was probably my favorite experience out there in the Sandhills of Nebraska. And boy, I played, was it three courses just three courses in Nebraska. Every single one of those was in my top five.
Which so ones? Sandhills
and then Landman, which is cool. Mm-hmm. It's a brand new golf course. It just opened this past year and there's a tremendous demand for that, which is cool to see that they opened up their tee sheet for 2024. Right now it's under snow, so nobody's playing, but they opened it up, excuse me, and it sold out 90 minutes every
it's crazy time.
So that, I mean, if you look where that place is, it's not like they're drawing from a major market. They're drawn from passionate golfers, and they're all over the place, and they're like, we're going. Obviously that's a great golf course, and it's got a lot of buzz around it. So I don't think every place can do that, but you know, you'll see a handful of those every year now that will open up, that will sell. I mean, if they're selling out that fast, I mean, there's a tremendous demand for more of that. And it's just a brand new course. Those guys are going to go build more, and you'll see a lot of stuff that gets built in the Sandhills in Nebraska. Nebraska is going to be the jam for new courses like that, because there's so much land. And it's perfect for golf. It's sandy. And I think it's something like, I don't know, 80 of the top 100 in the world are sand-based golf courses. So there's something special about that, from the playability, the ease in which you can build those golf courses, the drainage, the type of grass that you can grow on there. It's just that's what golf courses were built on. You know, when our game started, it was the sand in between the city and the sea is where we built our very first golf courses in the world. And that that sort of terrain, I think, is special for golf. And the good news is we've got all of our premier architects that are building golf courses and are in demand right now understand that. And they search out those sandy soils and those tremendous pieces of land to build golf courses on. And there's not a lot of really good land left in America, right? You know, nobody's building anything on the California coast. It's all spoken for in one way or the other. And, you know, maybe they clear some red tape and find a way to do that. But that's a monumental achievement, is to, you know, secure the ability to build a golf course on the coast of America, because it's, you know, it's popular land now. And I think that's why Bannon Dunes was such an achievement. The achievement of actually getting the permitting and there's a book on it, but to get that secured and have the ability just to build a course there was such a score. And to see them do it so well is that Bannon Dunes is one of the, well, it's the greatest achievement in golf in the past, you know, I don't know how far back you want to go, but we could say 50 years and if not more, what they've done for the modern game and bringing that links golf experience from places like Ireland and Scotland to America, I think has opened up a lot of golfers' eyes how great the origins of our game are and what that experience is like. And I mean, all you need to do is ask somebody about Bannon Dunes and they'll tell you. I mean, it's a cool experience.
So another piece that I want to hit on, stepping aside from golf courses and what makes them so fun to play and so different from each other, is there are a lot of people involved in this tour, in your tour, not just in 2018, but in 2023. Talk to me about what it was like, you know, going about this journey the first time and then the second time, and just the scale of how many people are involved, the way they perhaps changed your life over the past 6 years. What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, it's the people. It's like, I was the, you know, I don't, it's a different sort of involvement, because I'm the person doing, there's probably about five jobs that exist on this RGV tour. And I did all of those, from the driving, the social media, the photography, to the route planning, to the event planning, to, you know, the photography and videography. You could break that up into about five different jobs, but people helped along the way. That's what made it doable. From a motivational standpoint, to invitations to all their golf courses, an insane amount of folks, 1,500 people I played golf with on this most recent tour. And I think it was another 1,000 on the first tour. And that's what made it special. As you know, I think when I started out, I was really excited to see the golf courses. From a selfish perspective, that was my driver, is to see these golf courses and play them and to photograph them. And kind of, that was what kind of drove me. And then it changed into an appreciation of the American golfers out there, and the, you know, the Finnish and the Swedish ones as well, and anybody that would came over. I played with a lot of people from overseas that came in and were experiencing American golf and joined in with me. But their excitement to be a part of something like this, their generosity from just opening up their golf courses to me, as well as, you know, we raised $40,000 for the first tee, mostly the greater Seattle chapter, but North Florida and Michigan and a number of different chapters across the country that we cut checks to along the way, and a couple other charities, the National Links Trust. And so there was generosity there that it really changed my way that I view human beings. You know, if you are watching the news every day, you're going to think we're not that good. You know, we're evil to each other. We kill each other. We start wars, things like that. And, you know, my life was anything but that this past year. It was about experiencing people at their best. And so you really see what humans are capable of, and it changes your perception. It's a cool lens in which I got to look at the world at in 2018. And then I even noticed how it changed back as I became more of a normal citizen. And then when I went back on the tour, it kind of reopened my eyes again. And that's a neat thing. It's, you know, where there's a, we have a lot more in common than we do different. I think, you know, I'm not the first person to say that or experience that, but when you strip away everything and you're just some guys or girls and a group of people hitting a ball around a field and trying to get it in the hole as fast as you can, it really appeals to the commonalities. And then you can, you start to appreciate the difference in people once you have established a common baseline and realize, you know, we're playing the same game we love. And then that's a great way to get to know people and eliminate any bias you might have towards different groups of people or people that come from different places. And, you know, I play with them all, you know, and it was a treat to, you know, folks in Alabama, to the California kids, to New Yorkers, to some of the jabronis in Rhode Island. I say jabronis because there was the Jabroni Award that it was given out to. There's out of the 1,500 people that joined this tour, only five people earned a Jabroni Award, which is people that were out of line, people that their behavior was a little bit uncalled for. We won't get into the negative aspects of the thing, but if you think about it, five people out of 1,500, that's pretty good. That's pretty awesome. And so people are overwhelmingly awesome in on this tour. And you know, the five jabronis, they'll get what's coming to them. I mean, I think it's you know, if they're behaving that way, there's something else going on. There's other things wrong in their life that they had. Hopefully they kind of sort those things out and can turn a leaf. And maybe I just caught people on a bad day, you know, maybe something was going on, but most of the days were great people in great moods and happy to be a part of it.
That's a really great perspective. I had this thought about you, cause really 365 days, you're quite isolated from what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. Not a bad or a good thing, just the truth. And it's almost like, you know, you're out in space in a way. Like you might as well be hanging out at the ISS for, you know, 365 days. But along the way, you get to meet people, just like when you are in an airport or somewhere where you're removed from, you know, getting your groceries or doing your laundry or commuting to work. And you get to meet people who are pausing and just like reflecting on what they've been seeing and experiencing, and you get that meetup. But for you, having done it 365 days in a row, you get this perspective that is hard to have in doing anything else, you know. And that's, there's something cool about that.
Yeah, I think I kind of learned to cherish that, as I feel like I have a lens and a perspective that nobody else has ever had to view the world through golf, and not just through golf in terms of I'm in the golf industry, but like pure just golfing with people every single day. And, you know, a lot of the peripheral stuff is like, dude, I can't affect 99.9% of what happens in this world. You know, the stuff that people freak out about is stuff they can't change, and they can comment on, and they can let it bum them out. And, but honestly, it's like, I'm not doing anything. I have no effect on the politics aside from, you know, my little vote. That was all out of sight and out of mind, and it didn't matter one bit. Right. You know? And so I was able to focus on a completely, a little bit more pure thing. And so whether that's good or bad, I think you're right. It's a cool lens, and one that I'm grateful to have looked through.
So I'm interested about content, because you're a golf photographer, but not just that, you're a writer. There's more of that to come. And then you also spoke about the five or six jobs just relating to making the thing happen. So talk to me about your creative process and what you've come to love about your creative process over the years.
Well, I mean, as a golf course photographer, the thing that I love about it most is it allows me to play the golf courses and to see the places, you know? And so that's what I think is, I mean, as a golf course photographer, I don't think you're going to be premier if you're not a passionate golfer. Photography is such, everybody's a photographer now with the iPhone, and people can get really great photos, and it inspires people to take it another level. And that's what happened to me. You know, I was not an expert when I first started this, and I got lucky with a couple of shots. And then I started to say, hey, what if I became really good at this? What if I tried to be the very best in the world at this particular niche, taking pictures of golf courses? And I jumped in. You know, you learn about photography, and there's still many things that you can learn, maybe about the history, and it's an art form, right? And so you can take it whatever direction you want. But for me, it all starts with the golf course, and it's what, having seen this many different golf courses, that I kind of know when something's unique and special or quirky or worth photographing. And that's how I take a look. How can I incorporate this into an image or a piece of content that speaks to golfers? So that's what I look through, is kind of that golfer lens. And then becoming a professional photographer allows me to share it with other people. And that's powerful, is that I can create an image of a place that I can share with other people, and it might speak to them on a level that's similar to me. And I'm hanging in homes all over the country, a photograph that I took that they loved, that maybe reminds them of their, I mean, I saw one the other day. It was like my grandmother's house is in the background of the photo. And it was, when I took that photo, I had no idea, obviously, and they found it and they wanted it hung up in their home. And that to me is a cool thing. I like to think that I'm doing my part in terms of what I can affect, and bringing a little bit of beauty and joy to people through golf. It's like this, when you kind of find your purpose, it realizes, you know, I'm not a big force. I'm not going to change the world, but if everybody had that sort of purpose and a place that they say, this is what I do, and this I, and I'm, my goal is to make people feel better and more excited about the game of golf through anything that I can share through my experiences, and then you're able to deliver on it because you're a little bit more focused. You have a goal and a mission and a purpose. There's a lot of people that float through life without purpose, and I know that because I was kind of one of them for a long time. And when it changed, that made all the difference for me in terms of fulfillment and joy and happiness in my own life. And then you can affect other people's lives in a positive manner. Mm-hmm. I was a sales guy before, and you know, I didn't really have that purpose. I think I tried to find purpose in saying the things that I sold them made their daily lives a little bit easier, and part of that was true. But it really, I wasn't passionate about it like I am golf course photography. And for sure. That is a gift that I don't take for granted, and I hold on to as hard as I can, because it'd be my worst fear if I wasn't able to do this every day, or not every day, but, you know, have it as my profession. You know, that's something that I never want to lose. And hopefully I can hang on to it until I leave this earth.
I relate to that feeling of just like not knowing what you would do without that. I've been reflecting on this idea. It was Jesse Itzler deserves the credit on this. The term is not his, but he's the guy who got it to me. And that is the idea of a masogi, which is a year defining event. And the whole idea there is, like, you think back, well, what did you do in 2018? You played, what was it, 400 and something golf, 410 golf courses.
Yeah, it was 405, but I counted the par threes. So okay, it was probably under 400. Yeah.
Par threes count too.
Not on this, not in 2023. They had to be full 18 hole, 6,000 yard golf courses.
Understood. Cool. So it's like, you know, that defined your year. That was 2018. And there are a lot of smaller memories in there. 2023 obviously was a huge year, a record-breaking year, literally. What do you see for the future? Do you want to do this again and differently? Do you have something else on the menu coming up? What are your thoughts going forward?
Yeah, so I love these sort of things. I've done them, which I would love to replicate smaller portions of this. And in I think it was 2021, I believe it was, the Wisconsin State Golf Association, which is a very good state golf association, and maybe the best of the bunch in the country. Rob reached out to me, and they were doing this thing called an internship, and it was basically you play golf and create content around it and to showcase the beauty of Wisconsin golf. And that one I did, they said 50 courses in 50 days was the job description. I was like, guys, let's let's pump those numbers up, you know. And I think I ended up playing around 79 different golf courses in the 50 days. And that was just a treat. You know, it was 50 days. It was a little bit more manageable. This year thing, I don't know if I'm going to do this again because it's just so consuming. But in smaller doses, it can be really cool. And I look back on my time in Wisconsin, and that was really kind of a smaller version of this. And that was really fun. But, you know, that's another Misogi. That was a, you know, 2021 defining event for me. And I don't have one of those on the horizon. I look to, I've got plenty of smaller events. You know, I go to the Pure Insurance at Pebble Beach. I do the Tiger Woods Foundation event at Pebble Beach. Kind of these are my things that I do and I love every single year. So, and then I'll sprinkle in various trips and golf course excursions and things along the way that I really much look forward to. But like these big events, there's nothing massive where I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this. But ever since I've left my job to be in golf and a course photographer, something is come up. And so I think I'd be foolish to think that there's not something big on the horizon. And there's so many creative people in golf now that want to do these cool things that inspire and motivate people and attract attention to, you know, whatever it is, a state golf, you know, a state of golf courses, or is it a location or a destination? But there'll be something. Right now, my focus is on creating a book from my experiences, something that I can share with other people. I'm writing it because I want to write it, which I think is kind of a cool thing. I'm not looking at, oh, here's a way to cash in. It's like, no, if I can live and eat and survive, obviously I like money and don't mind making it. And I'm not going to make some stupid business decisions, but the motivation and the driver for this is because of what I love to do and I want to share it. And so that I think is where things should come from. And if you look at things that have been the most successful, would it be movies or any sort of thing? It comes from like a pure passion standpoint. I'm writing this movie because I think I want, this is cool. And I believe in this idea. And then those are the ones that are the best because people have an innate ability to sense that the genuine authenticity, you know? And that's what people crave that. And they can also see through the BS and the, you know, the plea to just kind of cash in or do something that's unauthentic. Doesn't last long. And I just like to do stuff. I just like to keep it real, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious what has inspired you or what has inspired the book on the book front. And maybe if it's not a book, what inspiration are you taking to writing it? What's kind of, what theme are you going for?
Yeah. So the book itself is, I mean, it's inspired by the courses, course photography. So it'll be a landscape style coffee book, coffee table book, that will have a smattering of stories. And so I think the foundation of it, I think, is really cool. So it's very digestible. I'm not writing the great American novel. I'm not Tom Coyne here. I love Tom. I love his books and he's a part of the tour. But he's much more the wordsmith than I am. Not that I don't have my own way of using words, but I think what I'm going for here is a book that you can pick up and be inspired by the photography and it's fun to look at, but then, hey, here's a short story about the Green Cromax and John McCabe, which was from 2018. That story needs to be out there. And it's a fun little bit that I'll put in there. And, you know, it starts from the story of me. Obviously, I'm the character that is in this book. And so I'll let people know who I am from my sobriety journey to I got divorced on the first tour, which is, I didn't tell that one too much, but it's going to be in the book. So the story of that, and then ending with this, you know, it goes from the beginning to the end. And along the way, you get I try to shine a light on the people that I enjoyed time with, right? And that were a part of my journey with the generosity and entertaining little snippets along the way. And so then what you'll have is a full story of these two tours. And then Oh, I'm going to chalk it with the lists. People love lists, and I love writing them. It's very digestible, and so people want to know what's your dream 18 from here. So that'll be in the book. I'll go through it, which will take some time because you think, you know, what's the best second hole that I played? You're like, oh Jesus, how do I even go back and line up 580 second holes? And the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to go through and each course, and then there's something about like I'll remember a course, and I'll be like, oh yeah, this hole on there stood out to me. That was interesting. And then that one kind of comes down and I'll see what I've got. And we'll create all sorts of fun lists from there. Best par fours, best par fives, best value, all these different things, lists. Then we'll hand out awards to the people that were a part of it. You know, I think best laugh is going to go to my friend, Ashley Mayo, who had it wrapped up, you know, before the beginning of the first tour. You could recognize that laugh pretty much anywhere. And so things like that make it fun. And that's what the book will be. It'll be fun. You know, it's a recreational golf vehicle. So we're not professionals here playing the game. But that's the spirit. I mean, golf is a recreational sport for most of us. And that's the tone that we're going to be providing in the book. Fun, digestible, and beautiful.
It's part of the range of the game. I mean, I know that you've played some competitive golf, and competitive golf is an essential part of the game. It's fantastic. But it took me a long time to recognize how small of a portion of the game it represents. And also, it can be a bit of an echo chamber at times. And without seeing how much substance is in the recreational game, like from the very bottom up, is so important. Like the game is inherently recreational, and you've uncovered a lot of that. I'm excited to read your book, excited to have that on the coffee table. Talking about coffee as we kind of close the episode here today, I'm sure you've had a ton of early mornings. It's 36 whole days. You got a lot of work ahead of you. Early morning tea times. What is your outlook on caffeine and coffee?
You know, I'm not a coffee guy. I'm not averse to it, but you know, some people like, we got to stop by the coffee store before we hit the tea. No. If it's there, I'll have a couple swigs of it, but it never really was like going a part of it. I mean, the fresh morning air and the exercise tend to wake me up. I'm a push-up guy, so that's easy to do. Get a little bit of that elevated heart rate. So a lot of push-ups inside that RGV tends to kick in the endorphins when I'm bummed out about something that didn't work out my way. Just pop off some push-ups and things tend to have a different view all of a sudden. And I think that's due to the endorphins that exercise can give. And you obviously get those on the golf course as well. And so there's healthy ways to find those. I was mistaken when I searched for them in the bottle back in the day. And that was a false promise there, but there are things that I can do that anybody can do that gives them that sort of natural high. And that, you know, those positive emotions can sweep over you. And that's what I found. I think, you know, nothing wrong with coffee, more to it, but you know, maybe try doing push-ups every morning, see how that works for you.
And now a quick word about our friends at Good Walk Coffee. Mr. Simus, what's your coffee game been like recently?
Man, I always, and I mean always, have the Mudball Half Calf on me. I've been loving the bump and run cold brews on the go. And lately, it's been the breakfast ball.
Give me a little bit more color on the bump and run cold brew.
Well, I love making coffee at home, but I can't do it all the time. And when I really got to move and I need my Good Walk, I reach straight in the fridge, grab a can, and go, and I get exactly what I need.
Where can the people go if they want to get involved with our friends at Good Walk Coffee?
You can purchase all your coffee, cold brew, espresso, pods, cases, beans, merch, and more for 20% off using code THETIE. That is THETIE at checkout. Set your custom subscription. The world is yours only at goodwalkcoffee.com.
Yeah, I love that. My favorite guy, Wim Hof, he says, do your own drugs, which is the way to go. And push-ups get you there.
Yeah, golf's a drug too. I mean, it is the well struck tee ball or the putt that goes just dead freaking center, never left the hole. A perfect little bunker shot. I mean, those are the things that, like, that was my crack, for lack of a better term. You know, I was searching for that feeling, and anybody that plays golf knows what that feeling is like, because it's rare. You know, they don't happen all the time. We hit plenty of bad shots that allow us to appreciate the perfect ones. And boy, I had a year full of those. And now, just talking about it, I miss it. You know, I'm like, oh man, I haven't played in 5 or 6 days, and it'd be good to hit an 8 iron right at the flag. You know, that's exciting.
All of those things are so important. I get that reference so much. I was also thinking about this, like, it's so important. And I'm looking at watch here, RV's lower, because it's, you know, wintertime and you don't get quite as much sun, and you're out in the sun every morning. You got sunlight in the eyeballs, and you're out in the real air and the real wind, out in the elements. There's a health element to that that can't be ignored. I'm sure you've felt this.
Yeah, I've noticed, because I've been spending more time indoors and less. I mean, just obviously, I was outside for a full year, and so it's like I'm a little bit under the weather now, and I was not the entire tour. So I'm like, now that I'm not experiencing this sort of innate health thing, it affected me in ways that I didn't expect, or you can't really measure. There's a healthy part to playing golf and to being outside and enjoying what you're doing every day. Not that I'm not enjoying what I'm doing now, but it's different. And so the illness, a little bit of the flu, crept in and it got me. I don't know if that's just a coincidence, or I think, you know, it could be there's some magic on the golf course. Anybody who plays golf knows that there's a, I mean, people talk about it as a religion. I'm certainly one of those folks that view it as a spiritual place, more so at sometimes than others. When you're sitting there on a 5 hour round, it doesn't feel very spiritual. But if you're first off in the morning and you're just going, and the sun is rising and the birds are chirping and the dew, I mean, it's like, this is cool. And I got plenty of that this year, and I haven't had as much this year. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
That is what it is all about. Patrick, where can people find your book when it comes out? And when can we expect to let them know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be, I got to think it's going to be a year. I've gotten the first tour stories down and framework ready to go, and some great photographs from there. So I'll just be dropping it from helicopters in the sky. No, it will be, it's the Back Nine Press is my guy that's going to, we're going to put that. They've done some great work with other people that I'm friends with. And so I know he does great work, and I've been in touch with him, and he does it for the same reason I do. He just loves to share the stories, and it's from a spot of passion versus financial gain. Hopefully we make some money, but that's not the purpose. But people can find me on Instagram at pjkoenig.com. Twitter has been a fun one this year. I think they call it X now, but I'm sticking with Twitter.
Me too.
Yeah. And then my website, pjkoenig.com, has got literally everything on there, and links to all my stuff. And that's where I do most of my writing. And I look forward to getting back to doing more of the writing and the blog style storytelling, as I had not, I didn't have the bandwidth to write a story about something. And so I'll save that all for a year defining book.
It's going to be fun to read. I can't wait to have it on my coffee table. Patrick, thanks for the time. Enjoyed having you here.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a real fun chat.